You're listening to Precinct 444, a podcast network from the National Law Enforcement Museum. Today we're bringing you an episode from the Encore series, where we revisit past museum programs and conversations. On May 10th, 2010, then-Arkansas Game and Fish Officer Mike Neal received a call about an officer-involved shooting an hour away from his location. His response and actions upon arriving on scene were heroic. On today's episode of Encore, we will revisit this discussion between Mike Neal and Jonathan Thompson, Executive Director of the National Sheriff's Association and the host of Reflections on the 2010 West Memphis Shooting with Sheriff Mike Neal, which originally aired in May 2020. Today's episode is part one of this revisit. Jonathan and Mike will talk about that day, the common occurrence of complacency on the job, and the specialized training of game and fish officers. Before we begin this program, let's take a moment of silence to remember Sergeant Brandon Potter and Officer Bill Evans, the two West Memphis officers who lost their lives that day. And now for Encore, Reflections on the 2010 West Memphis Shooting with Sheriff Mike Neal.
You know, 10 years ago today, our country had a hero step in, and we're going to talk with him in a moment. But he stepped in, unfortunately, after some people were killed, and after some citizens were killed, and after those in uniform that were killed. I know I speak for all of you when I say this, but I hope that you'll think through this presentation and think tonight when you're home alone, perhaps, or at the table, and remember all of those people. And moreover, the names that are on that wall here in Washington, D.C., that many of us, we think about, we pray for, and we remember. Last week was National Law Enforcement Week, and for the first time ever, we were unable to hold that live vigil. And for those of you that have had the honor and the privilege to attend that, like I have, it's a life-altering event. And for those of you that are watching this in law enforcement, on behalf of the nation's 3,086 sheriffs, every day I thank you for what you do, and I'm so humbled beyond words, tell you what it means to lead your organization as well, to be a part of law enforcement in some very, very small way. Now, tonight we have some amazing stories that you're going to hear, and they aren't stories, they are a discussion. There's some really compelling questions of how things happened, why, what were the results, and Sheriff Mike Neal, who's truly one of my heroes. I've heard this presentation, and it's awe-inspiring in so many ways. And that is that's something that we on the sidelines forget sometimes, is that people like Sheriff Neal, before they were even a sheriff, every day they did things that were beyond words and beyond the pale. So we thank them with so many things, but we need to thank them with the support of just being there for them, especially now in this COVID environment. For those doctors and nurses, we thank you, we love you, we appreciate it. And for those in fire and EMS and law enforcement, we really truly thank you. You know, it's a pleasure for me to introduce tonight's featured speakers. You all know him, I'm sure, by reputation. You probably read up about him. But Sheriff Neal has a really interesting past. Aside from being in law enforcement, things that he's proud of, aside from those three daughters of his, the fact is he spent 10 years in the fire and rescue business. He saved countless lives. It's in his DNA, ladies and gentlemen. And that's something that we all should admire, not just because he's a sheriff, as I do admire him, and he was in law enforcement, but that's something that he recognizes, is that he carries that honor around with him for the rest of his life. You know, he was also the youngest to ever receive the grade of captain in that fire agency. If that weren't enough, Sheriff Neal has also started and has led a very established national training company as it relates to safety and security. Sheriff Neal and his life has done an awful lot. He's older than the 21 that he looks like by a few years, but he's also a truly good person. And those are the things that all of us these days really appreciate. Without further ado, to talk about a very tragic, very compelling, and very important lessons learned about the West Memphis shooting in Crittenden County, which is just across the Tennessee line in Arkansas. Ladies and gentlemen, I turn it over to my friend, Sheriff Mike Neal.
Thank you, Mr. Jonathan. I appreciate the kind words. Really do. It's been a long 10 years. Can't believe it's been 10 years today. In one way, it seems like it was yesterday, and then in one way, it seems like it was 100 years ago. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. It's an honor.
Yes, sir. So how do you want me to?
Like, why don't we do it this way? Why don't you walk through the history of the event, how things came to unfold, and share a little bit about how we got to where you were in that day.
Absolutely. So May 20th, 2010 was a Thursday. It was a beautiful day, just like today was. Today was a very beautiful day here. It started out as a normal day. You know, every day in law enforcement, you get up and you go to work, you know there's a possibility that you won't come home. That day was, you know, one of those days. I didn't ever think that morning when I got up and went to work that my day would end the way it ended. So it was very traumatic. I went to work that day. I was an Arkansas Game and Fish Wildlife Officer. I was assigned to Troop D in the Eastern Post, which covered all the eastern counties right up by the Mississippi River. West Memphis was in that post. So when the call went out that day that there was officers down and they needed assistance, you know, we all went. And a lot of people don't know what game wardens are or what they do. Our main focus was wildlife protection and conservation, but we were also state law enforcement. So we had full arrest powers and authority as your troopers or highway patrol or any of that. So when you get a bad call like that, everybody's going to go. And I answered that call that day. And, you know, and in my mind is I was going over. I should have been about an hour drive. Wound up being about 40 minutes for me. I was making pretty good time, but. And in that time going over, you're thinking about, you know, what's going to happen and what if in the situation, how you're going to handle these things. But on the other side of your mind, you're also thinking nothing's going to happen. You know, nothing's going to come of this. They're already gone. It's, you know, we've done this before. And that's where that switch, you got to be able to flip in your mind and shut that off. And be prepared for that next moment. And I tell people in training all the time, you know, in a critical situation, you're going to do one of two things. You're either going to rise to your level of training or you're going to fall to your level of training. So you always got to be prepared for that day when your number's called. It's not a matter of if your number's going to get called, it's when. You have to be ready and prepared. So when I made it into town, driving a Game and Fish truck, four-wheel drive, at a high rate of speed, I guess it burnt quite a bit of gas. So I looked down and my gas light was on. I was pretty disappointed, pretty irritated that I had to stop and get gas, you know, because I'm trying to get to a critical incident and I'm out of gas, you know. So I pulled in to a gas station in West Memphis. Didn't know where I was at, didn't care. It was the first place I saw. I pulled in to get gas. And all the things of life were running through my head. You know, I had to hurry up and get gas. I had to get back out. You know, we had to do this, we had to do that. And God has a way of getting your attention. I promise you, if you've never felt this, it's pretty humbling. But I'm that guy, man. I'm blonde haired. I have squirrels running around in my head and pretty frantic. And I realized while I stopped getting gas, that 200 yards from that gas station is where Bill and Brandon were killed. And I'm going to tell you, that was a pretty humbling moment, you know, knowing that there was two guys that got up and did the exact same thing I did that morning. they kissed their family goodbye and they didn't go home. So, and you know, it's been 10 years. It still hadn't gotten any easier. So after I finished getting gas, I was pretty focused at that point. I was pretty determined. Luckily, I turned by the service road there in West Memphis. It ran right beside I-40. And I started driving. And I started thinking, you know, how are we going to handle this? What do we need to do? I had prepared myself. I'd put on my body armor. I had taken my rifle and had hung it around my neck, slung it, had it hanging right in front of me, had my one hand on my rifle, and I was driving with my left hand. I didn't realize 15 minutes from the time that I got into town that I would be in a gun battle for my life. As soon as I got gas, I made it about a mile and a half down the road when the dispatchers come over the radio and they start screaming, "We need available units 798 West Service Road, Walmart. Suspects were spotted in row 12. And, you know, I talk about God a lot, and he puts you in places where he wants you. I was a game warden. You know, who would have thought I'd ever be there? But I had the tools and the equipment for the job that was needed to be done that day. So as I'm driving and that call comes in on the radio, I'm there. I'm right there at Walmart. I'm looking at it. And I passed an unmarked unit. That unmarked unit had the sheriff and his chief deputy in the car. W.A. Wren was the chief deputy and Dick Busby was the sheriff. And we met on the service road. And they turned in one end of the parking lot. I turned in the other end, and the suspects we met right in front of the Walmart doors. W.A. and Sheriff Busby went head-to-head with them first. They were shot immediately in their car. And as they were being shot, I'm coming up from the other end of the parking lot, and I see this. I see the suspects leaning out the window, and they're shooting the police car to pieces. And I knew at that point I had to do something. So in the Game and Fish Academy in 2007, when I went through it, they taught us to shoot through our windshields. In 07, that was still unheard of. That's the kind of training that the Game and Fish gave us. We were highly trained officers. So as I was driving and approaching the suspect, I knew what I was going to do. So I was driving with my left hand. I had my rifle with my right, and I pulled it up, pointing it at the windshield as I was coming up. And I thought, I'm going to pull up and engage through the windshield. I'm not going to take time to stop, get out, or anything. And about that time, they see me, and they get back in the car, and they start to reverse. And I don't believe they were running. These guys didn't have any run in them. They were turning to attack me, is what they were doing. This was not something the Game and Fish taught us. This was a spur of the moment thing. I took my Game and Fish truck and I rammed them. State police estimated the impact at about 55 miles an hour. Now you think about the dynamics of this in a Walmart parking lot. They're not real big. That's a lot of speed closing at a high rate of speed in a short distance. And it was a hard impact. I was not wearing a seatbelt. My airbag did not deploy. And as soon as we hit, the driver turned in his seat. Now, my push bumper is touching his seat, the ram bumper, the grill on the front of this Game and Fish truck. It's touching his seat. So he's at the end of my hood. He's 7 feet from me when he turns and aims a pistol at me. And that's where I engaged the first two shots through the windshield. The passenger then started to engage and started shooting. He was shooting across my body through the windshield. And you can see, if you ever get to come to the museum, you can see the truck on display. You can see the bullet holes. They start at the post of the windshield and they were coming across towards me. He was trying to find me in the truck, and I was laying over pretty much in the passenger seat, returning fire. The shrapnel was hitting me on my left side. I had a piece of glass went through my left eye. I'd cut my forehead when I dove into the passenger seat on my laptop desk. So I'd taken a head injury from that, but all I could think was shoot faster. And that's where I finished the rest of my magazine. I shot 30 rounds of 223 through the front windshield of that truck. And the compression and all the noise blew my left eardrum during the gunfight. I ran out of ammo. I knew I was in trouble. I was trying to reload that rifle. I was laying on top of it. I was laying on top of my service weapon. I couldn't get to my shotgun. I was kind of a sitting duck at that point. I made the decision to put it in reverse. I held the truck to the floor and reversed out. Once I come to a stop, I jumped out of the truck, ran to the back, trying to reload. I was trying to check myself for bleeding and injuries. I knew I was hurting. And one of the officers there, Nick James in West Memphis, stopped and he picked me up and checked me out. And, you know, we reengaged and made the scene clear at that point. So you're talking about 17-second gun battle, which doesn't sound very long. But when you have AK-47 rounds, 7.62 by 39 rounds coming across your body for 17 seconds, that's a very long time, I promise you.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Mike, some things people may find odd is that in Arkansas, the Game and Fish are as well trained as they are. Tell folks a little bit about the training you went through, because it wasn't a weekend camp with Boy Scouts that you had.
No. So the Game and Fish Academy is basic law enforcement academy mixed with the Game and Fish Academy. So it was 22 weeks of training. So that was an extreme long time. And in those 22 weeks, all we felt like we did was shoot, fight, and swim. Because as a game warden, you got to be able to swim. If you fall out of the boat, you know, you got all your equipment on you. You got to be able to survive or help someone else in that situation also. So the training that the Game and Fish go through, and a lot of people don't pay attention to the game wardens or wildlife officers because they don't know anything about them, but they're highly trained. They have all the equipment. So I tell law enforcement all the time, man, rely on your game wardens because they got all the boats, the four wheelers, the night vision, thermal imagers. You know, we had everything. So we were very, very well trained, and that's what allowed me to live through the day, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that from deputies across the country and law enforcement. We hear it quite often. As you're driving, you know, in excess of 80 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour, down to a scene you know is likely to be hot, you said, you know, you know on the one hand in the back of your mind, you got to count on your training. On the other hand, you're saying to yourself, but it won't happen to me.
Right.
Can you walk us through that a little bit? What do you mean it won't happen to you? Why would you say that?
That happens a lot in every job, not just law enforcement. You get complacent in your job. And you do the routine things every day. Same thing. You get up every day, you work your schedule, you go through your day, nothing happens. Nothing happens. So you start building that up in your mind that this small town USA, as sheriff right now, this is small town USA for me. This is a very rural area. Those kind of things don't happen here. This is not the kind of things that go on in our neighborhood. And, you know, we get that mindset going, and that's what gets a lot of officers in trouble. And that's why I preach and I rely on training. If you're not training, it doesn't have to be a physical training, mentally training, thinking about how you're going to do it. Because if you can't win the fight in your mind, you will not win the fight on the street.
Yeah.
You've got to be mentally prepared and focused all the time. And complacency will sneak up on you, but you got to be able to throw the switch into survival mode and fight your way out.
So you're driving high speed. You're running out of gas. You get to the gas station. You said you had that moment of God touching you on the shoulder. You said two blocks or 200 yards away, you know, is where two people lost their lives. What does that mean? What's that switch to you? What did that tell you to do? How did that change your posture?
It made it real. You know, it was, you know, you hear the stories on things that are going on, and you, I was listening to it as it unfolded in front of me on the radio and things that were going on, but it wasn't real yet until I saw it. And, you know, I could see their vehicles. I could see the investigators. I could see everything that was going on. And that's where it really, really come down to a focus at that point. Wait, you know, this is real life. This is a bad deal. We're in trouble here.
At that point, when you're there at the gas station, you're hearing sirens, I'm assuming?
No, it was eerily quiet. There was no sirens. There wasn't a whole lot of movement just at the crime scene, and they had the roads blocked, you know, on the interstate. But it was very quiet. It was very eerie. That's part of it. I've never actually processed how quiet it was until now, but yeah, it was really weird.
Part 2 airs on May 24th and will conclude this special revisit of the 2010 West Memphis shooting with Sheriff Mike Neal. We thank you for your support, and remember, our upcoming episode releases are every Wednesday and published exclusively on Tuesdays is our monthly Icons episode. We hope you learned something from this episode of Encore and will join us next time for another edition of Encore, where we revisit past museum programs and conversations. A special thanks to all of you for listening to this episode of Encore, a series from the Precinct 444 Podcast Network by the National Law Enforcement Museum. Please subscribe to Precinct 444 on your favorite podcasting platform to stay connected and to receive our latest content as soon as it drops. We would love to hear from you. Send in your questions, comments, and feedback to precinct444@nleomf.org. You can help us make our content even better. The National Law Enforcement Museum is located at 444 East Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., and is dedicated to telling the story of American law enforcement. We expand and enrich the relationship between law enforcement and the community through educational journeys, immersive exhibitions, and insightful programs. Find us online at lawenforcementmuseum.org and stay tuned for more podcast content from Precinct 444. Until next time, stay safe. We'll see you at the precinct.